Welcome in to episode 134 of the Courtside Crossover with Chris Partee. This week, I got my man Sean Beckwith back in the building with me. We're going to jump right into this. The NBA playoffs have started, got through all the play-in drama. In the playoffs, every series has played two games to this point when we're recording. Sean, what's going on, my man? Welcome back. Thanks for joining me, too.
Not much. How are you doing?
Oh, man, you know, I'm just hanging, just, you know, enjoying it. Today's a big day. We're doing this on a Thursday. It's the NBA playoffs, and we also got the NFL draft, so it's a busy day for everybody. There's a lot going on. All right, so let's we're going to jump into, obviously, the playoffs and got all the brackets here right in front of me. I want to ask you first, from what you've seen so far through, you know, two games of each series, has anything surprised you? From any, and you can pick any series you want, whether it be a player, just a team in general. Has anything surprised you so far through the first couple games of any of these series?
The thing that would surprise me would be, I guess, kind of the low scoring, I guess, hasn't really surprised me, but it's just kind of shocking to see the like pace of play and the totals go back to what kind of we think they should be in the regular season. So that's been the shock to me, because, you know, some of these games have just been rock fights. A lot of, like, even like the Dallas Clippers series has been just one-on-one stuff. And then the playoffs, it seems like it's twice as hard to do. And so that's what shocked me, I guess, is just the pace of play and the lack of scoring, I guess, that it hasn't really translated.
So what do you think other than the pace, I guess, slowing down, do you think it has something to do with the way referees are calling games, or even, you know, because even during the season, they seem to, I guess this year, start to let the players play a little more, and it seemed like they weren't calling as many ticky-tack fouls as we always complain about and have for years. Do you think the officiating is part of it? I mean, what do you see as part of the reasoning for the change of pace? Like this soon, you know what I mean? Like, playoffs just started. Usually it takes a little while for things to slow down a little bit, or you see it from certain, like, teams like the Heat. We know they're going to play a slower pace. That's what they do. You know, even with Jimmy Butler there, they're not an up and down team. They want to grind you out and make you play their style. But why do you think we're seeing pretty much almost every series, you know, scoring is less, teams are slowing it down? Like, why do you think we're seeing that? Or do you have a reason for that?
I mean, I hate to say effort, but I think a lot of times in the regular season, some of these games, once they get hit 17, 20, 25 point leads, you see kind of teams go in coast mode. And we've seen games kind of get out there, but then comebacks have been made.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, Lakers gave a 20-point lead the other night, and I thought at one point, I was like, I'm going to turn this off because I know how this goes. And then, you know, they come back and storm back and everything like that. But I just think that you're seeing a little more effort. I think you're seeing full lineups too, full complements of lineups. Obviously, like, Kawhi missed the first game. But every single one of these games, if guys are healthy, they're playing. There's no kind of cautionary rest at all. Even Embiid's coming back and playing through everything he can. So I think you're seeing that, and I would say it's that, and then the refereeing. They're kind of letting things play more. Letting guys play more, and that's fine. Absolutely, like, with the effort, that comes with effort too. And if they're going to call ticky-tack fouls that we've seen in the past, like, we're going to see just free throw fests, and we haven't seen a lot of those yet. So,
not yet. You know, it's only a matter of time. But and I could be wrong, that games could be called the same pretty much all the way through, and I would like that. I'm all about consistency, and I'm sure when it comes to that, you are too. As far as what's a foul in the first quarter, can it be a foul in the fourth quarter? You know what I mean? Because, like, we've seen over the years where sometimes you just don't know what a foul is. and you don't know when one's going to be called. And when it seems like it should be called, it isn't called. Of the eight series that we have going on right now in the first round, five of those, a team is already in a 2-0 deficit. Of those teams that are in the 2-0 deficit, which one is the most cooked? Like, to you. So we got, what is it? So we got Thunder, Pelicans down 0-2. Wolves, Timberwolves, Suns down 0-2. And then Lakers are down 0-2 to the Nuggets. And then over in the East, we got the Magic down 0-2 to the Cavaliers and the Sixers down 0-2 to the Knicks. So out of those teams, you know, in your opinion, now, which team literally just has the least shot of coming back to even make it a series? Not even just win it, but just to make it a series.
My first choice would be Orlando, but I'll hesitate on them because we haven't seen them play at home yet.
Okay.
I mean, obviously, we haven't seen all these teams who are down 0-2 play at home yet.
Before you move on, is that because they're young? Because that would probably be mine. Would be because they're just young teams, you know, first time playoffs, first time in this atmosphere. It's just tough. You know what I mean?
Young teams and nobody's hitting shots.
I mean,
we knew that was going to be the problem coming in. Defense has been fine. They've held the Cavs to, you know, serviceable outputs, but they just haven't been able to pick up their side of the scoring. And so,
yeah.
I think that's why I hesitate to put them straight up in the cook category, because we know how things change between home and away for role players, and that's who they need to hit shots. So we'll see. But I guess the game last night that was jarring to me, I think OKC is going to – there's no Zion, but I think OKC is going to put that away.
Sweep?
In 4 or 5.
Okay.
There might be one that gets away from them in New Orleans, but without Zion and without a confident CJ, I mean, he's playing okay, but last night is just showed how much they struggle with offense when they don't have Zion. And Brandon Ingram, this is just kind of what he does. He's so inconsistent, and they're talking about him getting in the flow in the second half last night. And it's like, I don't see it. This guy gets pushed off the ball. He gets pushed off his spots too easily.
Yeah.
He takes kind of bad shots. I mean, I'm not saying he's terrible, but.
No, he's not terrible. You know,
they were planning on having Zion there and then seeing who between CJ and Ingram would be able to get it going at the second advantage tonight. But if you have 2 second bananas trying to, you know, having to fill roles each night, yeah, is what you get. And OKC just looks really, really freaking good.
Yeah. OKC looks really good. The Pelicans, I think, you know, Zion frequently being injured. I mean, this was a year where he played most of the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get right to the cusp of the postseason playing, and now he's out. It's just one of those things, but it's like, damn, like, I feel bad for him. One, I mean, he just can't catch a break. And I'm not using that in a punny, you know, sort of way. He just can't catch a break from these injuries. It's always something with him.
Yeah. Well, I think with the injuries, Zion and also Embiid, soon as they started playing in games where the physicality is upped, like, they just both snapped. I mean, obviously, Embiid's coming back, but Embiid is super hurt. And Zion, like, he had to play, he played as hard as he could against the Lakers, and then his hamstring just gave out. And it's like,
I mean, it just makes you wonder, like, you know, what's going on with some of these guys where, and I mean, we've always seen this. You have guys that are just injury prone. It's, you know, it's pro sports in general, but it's pro sports. And you have these guys that are supposed to be stars, you know, if not superstars, and they just can't stay healthy. And that's definitely, you know, Joel Embiid, as far as, you know, I'd put him more, I guess, as far as on the court, you know, in that superstar realm, just because, you know, we've seen he's been in the league longer and we've seen him produce at a high level longer. And he's now won an MVP, which he got last year. But Zion is supposed to be on that path to superstardom. And it's just like he's not going to get there because he can't stay on the court for whatever reason. You know what I mean? And, you know, with the Sixers, let me ask you though, like, what do you think the Sixers have really in a realistic shot? Because I know he's not 100%. He can't be Embiid. He's played well, but it feels at times when I'm watching him in these first couple games, it still looks like he's a little ginger, you know, running a little gingerly on that knee. Like he's not, you can tell he's not 100%, even though he's playing well. It's not like he's out there dogging it. But I just don't know if he's going to have enough for them. And he says they're going to get back in this series and win it. Obviously, what do we expect him to say? But realistically, how much of a chance do you give them?
Well,
even to just 7. To push it there.
I don't know. 7, we'll see how it goes. My thing with Philly is they got enough to win the other night. Obviously, the 3 games got away from them. That was an epic collapse, whatever you want to call it. Man. But with the Knicks, this is the thing with the Knicks that concerns me is they don't really have another level because they play during the regular season like it's a playoff game every night.
Yeah.
And so when they hit the postseason, it's like, can Jalen Brunson get to another level? I don't know. I don't know if he can. He already plays 45 minutes or whatever his Tib wants to play him a game. That's an exaggeration, but they don't have another level to reach, in my opinion. We know how they're going to play, and they play hard, and like that's why it's so hard to beat them. But I think as playoffs go on, they start playing more talented teams. It seems a little more jarring because right now the Sixers have an Embiid who is on one leg and Tyrese Maxey, and they should have won. This series should be 1-1. I don't think I don't think it'll go 7. But if Embiid can give us what he's been given. That's the first 2 games of the series. Yeah, I mean, they could steal one at home for sure. For sure, that absolutely could happen. 1 or 2, but...
As far as the Knicks, I mean, I'm looking at the bracket here. There's really no reason why, I mean, even without Julius Randle, there's really no reason why the Knicks should not be in the Eastern Conference Finals in a few weeks because there's still a lot of questions with the Bucks. There's, you know, Giannis and his health. But do you really see the Knicks make it? Because we know the jokes about the Knicks. They're always going to do something to mess it up. It's kind of like the same thing with the Cowboys. You know what I mean? In the NFL, you know, they get all this attention, but they just always do something to mess it up. Do you see the Knicks making it to the conference finals? Like just based on their path right now, because I think we both will put them over the Sixers based on the Sixers and Embiid's health right now. But the next round, they're either going to get the Bucks or the Pacers.
They get to the conference finals. They would be, in my mind, akin to the Trae Young Hawks making the conference finals.
Okay, a little fluky.
The Lillard Blazers going to the finals. It kind of stars aligned, and they got to the conference finals, and they got dusted.
Got some breaks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't. As I said, I like New York. I like the way they play. I like how hard they play. I just don't know, they can't go up a notch. Some of these teams can go up a notch. They can play their stars more minutes. Like we keep waiting for Boston to go up a notch. I mean, it looks like they're trying to, but they haven't yet. But some of these teams with better talent, the Nuggets have gone up a notch. The Nuggets have gone up a notch. Like they look dialed in. You know, OKC's almost kind of gone up a notch. Like their defense is dialed in. The Knicks' defense is always dialed in. The guys are always playing hard. They're always dialed in. So it's just a matter of how much more juice can you squeeze out of the lemon?
Yeah. Yeah, with the Knicks, I mean, you can't deny that the Knicks, they've had a great season. I mean, you really, there's no way around it. They got the number 2 seed. But it's just, my thing is, you know, in the next round, if they get the Bucks, it really just all, there's still just so many questions with the Bucks. You know what I mean? Like, whether it be the chemistry thing, Giannis's health. I mean, I want to pick them because, you know, I picked them before the start of the season to make a deep run. But it's just tough with this. It's so tough because I didn't think they would struggle for this long. You know what I mean? Like with that team, with those guys, I thought they would be able to, you know, get in sync by January or, you know, even maybe February. And then I thought they'd be OK. Now, they were still winning games because they got a deep team and they're talented and they have a veteran team. So, you know, that can go a long way. But it's just so many. I can't remember the last time I've seen a team that was, you know, a top favorite to, you know, to make it to the finals, you know, coming into the season that struggled for this long. Like all the way through the season, they've struggled, even though they've won games, but it just hasn't been pretty.
No, it hasn't been pretty. And I think that when we talked before the playoffs, it's like the first one's not going to be fun for them. Obviously that was before Giannis went out.
Yeah.
And they tried one-on-one with the Pacers who love to just go on the Bucks and go right at them. Having trash. So, you know, people call each other front runners. Like, that's fine. Whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
But, the Bucks, I was excited after first game because I thought Lillard, like, okay, this is the guy we know we're going to see, and he's healthy. And they're letting him lead the team. Obviously, they have to let him lead the team. Also, Middleton's out tonight, too, I believe. Or, yeah, he's questionable, at least, for tonight. I believe that's the game tonight. He's questionable.
Yeah.
Maybe tomorrow night, whatever. He's questionable for the next game.
They play tomorrow.
He's questionable to go. And it's, they haven't been in sync. They have had guys injured all season. Middleton has been injured, it seems like, for 4 years on and off.
Damn near, yeah.
And, obviously, new coach, integrating everything else. But I just think that either one of the teams who gets the second round and likely plays the Knicks, the Knicks should beat them unless Giannis comes back and it's healthy. And I think that's a huge if because Giannis isn't healthy. We don't know when he's supposed to come back. And right now, the Bucks are in a dogfight with the Pacers team that
Sean,
is not afraid of them at all.
A little bit. Yeah. There you go. I couldn't really see your eyes. Yeah. Right there is good. Yeah, you good. Sorry.
No worries. Yeah. The Pacers just are not afraid of the Bucks, and it's gonna be hard next round.
It's gonna be much harder next round. But based on where it stands, this is a 7-game series, right? Bucks Pacers. I mean, I'm thinking this is a 7-game series.
I think so, just because it's just Lillard out there. The crazy thing is he goes away from Portland because he doesn't want to carry a team on his back in the playoffs, and
now he's carrying it.
He's carrying a team on his back in the playoffs, and I mean, I think they can get to the second round just because. I think Lillard can beat this Pacers team kind of like by himself, more or less, because Halpern hasn't been the same, and Siakam is, you know, really kind of inconsistent. He's fine, but you're not going to get 30-plus out of him every night.
Yeah.
So I think the Bucks can win. I think the Bucks can win for sure.
Probably in 7. Because I'm thinking, without Giannis, I'm thinking this is a 7-game series.
Yeah, I think it's a 7-game series.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. I want to jump up top in the East. So – everything we've always talked about with the Celtics pretty much happened the other night. Am I right or wrong?
You're right, but I feel like it's a little unfair because Miami set a record for most 3-point shots made in a playoff game. Like, are they going to do that again? I don't.
No, they're not. And I'm not saying the Heat are going to win this series because I don't. Without Jimmy, I just don't see him doing it, but. What I'm saying is the Celtics sometimes I get it. They set a record for hitting threes, but sometimes it just doesn't seem like the effort's there as far as the Celtics, you know, they're a team that, you know, they're a good defensive team supposed to be. And sometimes it just doesn't seem like the effort's there. Honestly, It just seems like I understand the and I'm not talking about just defensively. I mean, offensively as well for the Celtics. It just doesn't seem like they don't execute, in my opinion. They don't execute. I get it. Guys are hitting threes, but we've seen this too often with them. And they're probably going to lose another game in this series just because I think the Heat are a bad matchup for them in general, even without Jimmy Butler. I think the Heat are a bad matchup for them because they don't really let up.
Yeah, the Heat just haunt them. And like last night was just a perfect game of the Heat. Just like, we're going to have Spo made some adjustments and we're going to shoot 53s and we're going to hit half of them. And, you know, Tyler Hero is going to turn into Jimmy Butler, but with a jump shot. And, you know, it's just, it was so much fun to watching that game because I don't think Miami's going to win the series, but like Bam is absolutely killing them. He always destroys them whenever in the playoffs. It's always like, oh, here's Bam again, just working us like a speed bag. But I think with the Celtics, I don't know if it's an offensive like effort thing. I just think that.
Well, more so execution, in my opinion. I think it's more so execution. I mean, yeah, I understand that the Heat hit a million threes, but in my opinion, as the number one seed, you won 60 some odd games, 64, whatever it was. You can't lose by double digits at home in the first two games, and you can't. And I'm sorry, I don't care who the number eight seed is. You shouldn't be losing by double digits. I don't care how many threes they hit. I don't. I'm sorry. You're supposed to have one of the top. You're supposed to have really two of the top 20 offensive players in the league, in Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, and they can't keep you pretty much in the game. I mean, after the first quarter, they're pretty much behind most of the game. They were up early, but the Heat were pretty much leading the game most of the time.
I think the Heat were down three at halftime.
You know what? They sure were. Yeah, because they were talking about it. Yeah, and Shaq was saying that they're only down three, and I think Charles Barkley was counting them out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Down three at halftime, and then switch on. They're led by 10 in the third quarter, and then obviously they ended up winning 10 or something along those lines. But with Boston, it is weird what happens in close games with them. This has happened kind of all season. They haven't been in a lot of close games. But when they are, they just don't know how to get a bucket late or how to consistently get multiple buckets where it seems like, okay, we just need Jason or Jalen to go on a heater real quick, and that'll save the court. Then we get to our offense. I guess kind of what happened last night in the game, what did Brown went on like 11-3 run by himself to kind of get them back in the second quarter.
Yeah.
And like that's kind of what they rely on. They rely on Brown or Tatum to go off kind of individually for short spurts to settle the offense down or to get them lead so they can, you know, just kind of coast. And then when they get the lead, they are fine, share the ball, and they hit threes and all that stuff. But when they're in close games, it seems like they just look to Brown and Tatum to just take over everything, and it's a lot of just one-on-one stuff as opposed to kind of the team ball that I know a lot of their fans like desire from them. Like why do they stop passing the ball to Porzingis when they get in these close games? And where does Drew Holiday go in some of these situations? So
yeah,
They have to have something when it gets down to crunch time or when their offense isn't clicking that they go to consistently because they get good shots. Jalen and Jason can get, you know, any shot they want at any time, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're good shots.
Yeah, and I mean that's another thing, a pet peeve of mine with them is they take, I guess more specifically Tatum and Brown, like they take bad shots. That their shot selection is just bad sometimes, you know, whether it be where it's at on the court or taking shots and, you know, too early in the shot clock. Their shot selection is not the best to me. They're a deep team. you know, which is why I think, you know, they were able, and they're just more talented than most teams. Well, you win 64, 65, however many games they won this year.
I think their starting lineup is certainly talented. I know Pritchard has played well this year. I've always been kind of dubious of when people tell me how talented the Celtics are, because we know how good Jason Tatum and Brown are, and obviously Holiday and Porzingis are good as well. Like, they have a great starting five this year. But who after that, like, Al Horford is my age, I think. I'm 38. I think he's my age.
Yeah, he's a little older, but, you know.
I
think there's something to be said about having veterans around like that. I really do. I believe in that. I believe in the experience factor. And sure. You know, there's going to be a game, some point, a game or two, where Al Horford goes off and where they really need it. You know what I mean? Like, I just think there's going to be a game or two. It may not happen in this series because they may not really need it in this series. I really think they should win this series in five, but it'll probably go six because it's the Celtics. They're probably going to give up another game. It'll probably be back in Miami somewhere.
Sure. I guess the difference when I think of veterans on the Celtics and veterans on, say, like a Golden State team or even kind of a last year's Denver team is the veterans could kind of, like, they could kind of go on spurts of their own too, I guess. Like, you had Andrew Wiggins went off that one year. Last year you had Jeff Green come in and do big things. Bruce Brown came in last year for the Nuggets and did big things. And I just don't, like, who on the Boston team outside of those top four players is going to come on and just kind of do one of the things, like, oh, dang, Wiggins had 17 tonight, you know. Jeff Green just kind of had that kind of one game where he comes out of nowhere. I don't think Boston has those guys. People can tell, like, oh, Hauser or Pritchard or whoever. I just, they don't have that depth or that guy who's like, kind of has that confidence where he's just like, okay, I got it going right now and you can feed me the ball. And, you know, it can be this game. Like, you know, when they had Olynyk that one year.
Kelly Olynyk, yeah.
When they beat the Wizards in the playoffs, and Olynyk went off that game 7. They need a guy kind of like that.
I think
like, Horford, like Caleb Martin. Like, Miami has a million of those guys where it's like, oh, this guy is gonna he's gonna catch fire tonight and he's gonna go 5 or 6 from 3. Okay, but Miami has a million of those guys. I don't really. Boston. Doesn't
we've seen Al Horford do that though. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think Al Horford still has that in him. It's not going to happen every night. He's not going to give you 20 every night, obviously. But I still think he has it to where, because we fully expect them to be at least in the Eastern Conference Finals, the Celtics. If they don't make it to the finals, that's disappointing. But if they don't make it to the conference finals, that's a failure of a season, in my opinion. You can't have won 60-something games and have the best record in the league and supposed to be, you know, at least in the East, the best team, and then not make it to the conference finals. I can't see Cleveland or Orlando, whoever comes out. I can't see either one of them beating Boston. And honestly, that series will probably be a lot quicker than the Heat series. I'll be honest. They're probably going to beat either one of those teams. They'll either sweep them, in my opinion, Boston will, or it'll be 5 games against the Magic or the Cavs. Mm-hmm. I think the Heat have a better chance. That's just my opinion. So they should, in a few weeks, they should be in the conference finals. But so, like, I think within that time, we're going to get one, maybe two at most of those games from Al Horford where he has, you know, 20 points, 25, 24 points, whatever it is. Maybe he hits 3-4 threes, has 10, 12 rebounds, like one of those big games. He can't do it every other night even anymore. But one-offs, I think he still has that. Now, I think he's the guy that can give him that. Now, I think there will come a game where they need one of the guys outside of their top 3 or 4 to do something like that. I think there will come a time where they're going. And hell, it could be this series. I don't know, because the Heat just they play well against the Celtics for whatever reason.
Yeah, well, I guess that's the thing is those other random veterans. That's Holiday and Porzingis. Porzingis was bad last night. Holiday kind of goes in and out of games.
It seems like it.
But like they need Porzingis and Holiday to be the guys who kind of steady the ship when Brown and Tatum think that a step back 17 footer is the best.
They always think that's the best option.
Well, yeah, but
Sometimes it's a 23-foot step back. I mean, yeah. They always think that's a good option.
Well, whatever it is, that's when Holiday and Porzingis have to, like, you know, or Joe Mattis has to dial something up out of the timeout and just be like, oh, we're gonna run a play for Kristaps. We're gonna run, something with Holiday with the ball in his hands and let him kind of get to facilitate to whoever is open or run an actual play. And that's what Boston does that drives me crazy is it seems like they're not running stuff in close games. It just comes down to every look at Tatum, every look at Brown, and let's hope one of these guys can score 10, 15 points on their own in a short span and bail us out.
And that's what I really think is a huge part of the problem is that in those tight situations, especially late in games, it feels more like open gym where, you know, he just is like rolls the balls out and say, you know, have at it. And is rolling them in the direction of Tatum or Brown. Like, that's what it feels. But it's always felt like that with Boston, honestly, in late game situations. It's always kind of felt like, and I mean, you know, at this point, we keep talking about veterans. Tatum and Brown are veterans at this point. These dudes have been in the league since 2016 and 2017, respectively. So you're talking about 7, 8 years, but you know, for both of them, they're veterans now. You know, they may be, you know, 10 plus years younger than Al Horford, but they're veterans. They've been in the league. They've been to enough conference finals to say that, okay, they got a lot of playoff experience. It's astonishing to me to see that they're still allowed to do the same thing year after year.
Yeah, it is. They are veterans, and what surprises me is like the difference between, say, like what happened with Nuggets and Lakers on Monday night when Jamal Murray was, for you know, all intents and purposes, having a pretty bad game up until that fourth quarter.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
then in the crunch time, he knew exactly what shots he wanted. He knew exactly how to get where he wanted. Obviously, that's with the help of Joker.
Yeah,
Frost doesn't have that, but it's just like, he knew where he wanted to go and what he wanted to do. And Jalen and Jason, they know where they want what to do and where they want to go. But they don't always get there for whatever reason. The spacing is sometimes weird. I remember yesterday, they kind of had like a kind of delayed fast break, and Tatum had a guy, a small guy, kind of like on the block a little bit, and semi-transition, and he kind of took it back out, and then it's in that situation where it's like, hey man, Miami's back. They're not set. Don't bring it back out and let them get set. Go punish somebody. Go punish somebody. Turn around. Try and get right to the bucket and get a foul. I think he took 8 free throws maybe yesterday, maybe more than that. But it wasn't much more. But it also seemed like he doesn't. We want them to just be physical and go to the paint a bunch, and they don't. They love those. They love the. The tough shots, like you said, they're not great shots. You can get them anytime you want, but and we're seeing. If you want to kind of transition to another series. This is what's happening with the Suns right now too. Is they can only get they can only get those shots. Those are the only shots they can get right now.
Yep.
Booker and Durant and Beal. The only shots they can get right now are like the tough step back stuff. It's just really hard to make consistently. Like, of course, they can make them, but like you want another team that I think might be done. The Suns have just not looked good. They got beat by double digits in both games, and Booker has looked bad in both games. And Booker was a guy that me and you expected to offset and you know, amazingness, and has not even come close to doing that.
No. Yeah, I mean, so when I asked you about who's the most cooked, I was really debating in my mind when you were, you know, giving your reasoning. I was really debating, like, is it the Suns actually? Because this whole we're going to run without a real point guard thing, it's not working. I mean, it's just not. Like, they don't have near point guard to come in and settle these guys down. It's just, all right, KD, you take it this time. Book, you take it this time. All right, Bill, you're going to bring it up. And, you know, you're going to hit half court. You're going to pass it to Booker. And then he's going to go one-on-one. Or you're going to pass it to Durant. Or we'll get Durant down on the block on either side, and you know, we'll let him kind of do his thing. there's no cohesion. It seems like there's no cohesion. I know the coach is Vogel. He's probably going to be blamed for this, but I don't think it's all on him. I think it is more so the way the team is constructed. Honestly, I really think it's the way the team is constructed, and they tried to do a quick fix with bringing in Bill. Honestly, I mean, am I wrong about that? They just tried to say, all right, let's just put some stars. Let's just put guys that can score. I won't even say necessarily just let's just put the stars together. Let's put guys that could give us 30 plus a game if they need to. Let's just put them together and see what happens. And that's really what, to me, is what happened.
Yeah, I guess with Phoenix, it seems like in the playoffs at least, they were one of the teams like I was kind of not really worried about kind of when the scoring gets harder because they can score, you know, they can hit difficult shots. So it's like, oh, their offense will be fine. Their defense has been in shambles. I mean, they have no interior defense. Nurk and Eubanks, the Portland castoffs, have been thieves. And right now, so it's just, and I'm you got to credit Minnesota too because they are they're not. Booker has looked bad, and obviously, like Minnesota's defense is to credit for that. But Phoenix just can't do anything right now. They can't, you know, they can't get rebounds. They can't get good easy shots for the best three players. It's just kind of a mess right now. And Minnesota, Towns looks like he's fine. I guess they don't really need Towns to carry any kind of heavy burden because that's what Edwards is there to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, Phoenix home court changes stuff or whatever, but I don't know. It's I'm worried about Phoenix for sure.
Any chance that they win both of these games in Phoenix to actually make it a series? I think they'll win one, but I don't see this team coming back from a 3-1 deficit. I just don't. So I think they got to win both games to make it to really, really make it a series.
Yeah, I think last year in the playoffs, what did Phoenix steal two from Denver? I think they may have stolen. I think they stole two from Denver.
Yeah, were they the only team that got two from Denver last year?
I think so, but it was also because Booker and Durant like combined for like 80 in both games.
Yeah. Yeah.
And 80 in both games. So I think that you could see them go back to Phoenix and see Booker and Durant get two because they're, you know, two of the best scorers in the NBA. But are they going to win four of the next five? No.
It's not likely. I mean, it's just not likely. You know, you talked about their defense inside. That coupled with, you know, not having someone to get them settled offensively and, you know, actually run sets and get these three guys the ball where they need it, as opposed to them having to either do it themselves or just, you know, play ISO ball. This is probably a 5-game series.
Yeah.
In my opinion, I mean, I wouldn't be completely shocked if Phoenix pushed his six, but the way they played in the first two games, it doesn't seem likely. It just doesn't. Now, I got to give them one at home in Phoenix. I mean, if they get swept in this series, how different do you think they look next season?
I think you'll see. Like, they're going to have to get jettison somebody. I don't think they'll jettison any one of their three stars, but I think you'll see brand new centers and whatnot, and
yeah,
they try and get some replace some wings with some younger guys. But there's not much they can do. They're kind of
stuck.
Yeah, they're kind of stuck with what they're doing, and that's why this playoffs is supposed to be so interesting for them, at least because they went all in on not only Durant but with Beal. It was like, okay, now we got a team that we're going to contend for the finals, and you know they're going to be lucky to even get out of the first round. And we're talking about a possible sweep. Again, I don't know if it's going to be a sweep, but do you think they'll get steal one and Phoenix maybe two? But it just the the pieces that they need to complete to like kind of contend are not on the team. They're not on the roster. So it's just really hard for them.
Yeah. I mean, it is kind of hard to imagine them getting swept, but I have to keep in mind that, you know, I think, what was it, 2 years ago when he was still in, when KD was still in Brooklyn and they got swept by Boston? Was that 2 years ago? First round? They got swept by Boston 2 or 3 years ago?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not like we haven't seen a seemingly stacked Kevin Durant-led team. I'm not even saying he's the leader here. Like, this was Booker's team already. But it's not like we haven't seen one of these teams that Durant was a part of recently get swept. So maybe it's not that far-fetched to think that, yeah, they, I mean, they're down 2-0. They play, you know, they play again tomorrow night in Valley of the Sun in Phoenix. You know, I got friends and stuff down there, and yeah, even they're just like, man, they don't look good. They don't, like, it does not look good right now. So, Sean, let me ask you real quick before we move on from this series. If you're running the Suns, whether they get swept or just lose this series and just look really bad doing it, whether it's in five or whatever, would you be looking to try to break that big three up, like, and just get rid of one of them to try to bring in the more supplemental pieces as opposed to just trying to, and I'm not just saying, oh, just go get a point guard. I'm just saying bring in more supplemental pieces that fit well, as opposed to just having this big three and just kind of having some guys out there.
Yeah, I think that they could like look into that. I don't know. I also am pretty sure Beal might have a no trade clause.
I think he does. That's another thing that I don't know why all these guys are getting no trade clauses. Like anybody can get him now. I'm not saying Beal is not a good player, but to me, he's not worthy of a no trade clause. He's just not. I'm sorry. He's just not. He's not. Is Beal a top 10 player?
Are we talking about like
Overall player, not just scoring? He's not a top 10 player to me. I'm sorry. He's not.
The conversation is more, is he even a top 25 player?
It just seems like, and honestly, there's really not that many of them, but to me, there's still too many. I think that no trade thing should be for a select few. Really?
Yeah.
You can't have everybody having a freaking no trade clause. To me, that's just ridiculous. I'm sorry. And I know people don't like to hear that. I'm all for players getting their money, but when anybody can just say, no, I don't want to go there. Like, come on, man. What are you doing?
Well, I think what makes a lot of this harder as far as like a Phoenix trying to move a guy or get something on pieces or even like try and get some draft stuff. Right now, even for teams that want to blow it up, it is significantly harder under the changes that they've made. It's like to what you can do with trades. Yeah. You can't trade multiple first-round picks in consecutive years. So you can trade a 15th and a 17th, but that sixth, but then you have to hold on to that 16th. And so that's kind of, I'm sorry, I should say the 23rd, 24th, 25th.
Yeah, yeah.
If you kind of see my point, that you can't trade these picks as easily as you could because they just want to de-incentivize that kind of behavior from franchises.
Yeah.
But so even if, you know, the Suns wanted to trade one of these guys or even kind of blow it up, which I thought you were going to ask me if they should even continue on as constructed, because it seems what happens when you max out a lot of times, there's no room to pivot. So it's kind of like, oh, should we do this or should we just kind of
blow it all up,
down to the studs and blow it all up.
Yeah, I just don't see that happening. I don't see them making that drastic of a move to just blow everything up.
It's also just, as I said, just harder to do that. We look at all the picks that OKC and New Orleans got from all the trades they made. That's not possible anymore. The Blazers, like, I think they got 3 picks back total for Lillard. The other ones were like trade swaps.
Yeah, yeah.
So, it's just a lot harder for teams to blow it up or to even kind of get out of mistakes they've made. So Phoenix, I think, has to, if they can move somebody, you know, I don't know who they'd even move, because if you can't move Beal, then who is it? And it's not going to be Booker or Durant. I mean, Durant maybe, but he's
I can see Durant before Booker. I think.
Yeah, for sure. Booker. But it's just a matter of like, Beal's. I'm sorry, Booker's. Then now he's gonna be on a team where it's him and Beal and whatever kind of amalgamation of pieces they have.
Yeah,
man, it's tough. Don't know. Yeah, it's tough.
They are in a bad situation, and I'm gonna give props to the Timberwolves, who I have not been big on all year. As far as you know. Going deep now to me, a deep run is conference finals. I still don't think they're going to get there. I've stood by that because they're going to play the Nuggets in the second round. They're not beating the Nuggets. That's just my opinion. I don't think they beat the Nuggets. Maybe push them six. I'd be surprised if they push them to seven. Honestly, I just don't think they're. I don't think they're good enough to push the Nuggets that far. You know, if the Nuggets are healthy. Talking about
with the Nuggets and the Timberwolves series, it's about matchups too, and. The Nuggets are pretty big, so they don't really like that Wolves size is just
giving
the Suns all kinds of trouble. It won't really be as much of a factor against the Nuggets.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, with the Nuggets, you know, you talked about the game the other night with against the Lakers game too, and that shot game winner that Jamal Murray hits. You know, when you have a second guy. They have Nikola Jokic, who's probably going to win MVP again. It'll be his third. And we know him. He's not just all NBA. He's all world. He's mm-hmm. one of those guys, right? But when you have a guy that you can go to that isn't Nikola Jokic, that you trust to take a game, to take a shot like that in a clutch moment, and you have such a complete team, it's hard to beat a team like that in a series. Now, you may meet, you know, in one-offs, obviously, it's a long season. They're going to lose game. But in a seven-game series, to me, it's just hard to beat a team like that. And, you know, converse to what we talked about with the Celtics, the best two players in Denver, they take good shots. It's rare when you see a bad – we're really their team in general, but really, especially the big two there. It's rare when you see bad shot selection consistently. We see it consistently in Boston with Tatum and Brown. You don't see it consistently with Murray and Nikola Jokic. You just don't. So I think that goes a long way, which is why, you know, we talked about this before. It's hard for me to see a team in the West beating Denver 4 out of 7. It's just hard. I'm looking at everybody, and, you know, the Thunder, they look great. But I think if they get that far, being a young team like that, making it that far, you're going to make mistakes. You know what I mean? Like, and they're going to make mistakes along the way. Right now, they're just a better team than the Thunder. And the Thunder are shorthanded. Now, they probably were going to be better anyway, even with Zion, but definitely without Zion. They're just a better team than the Thunder. But as you get further, now we'll get to the Clippers and Mavericks in a minute here. I don't know about either of these teams, honestly. Well, when it comes to like making a deep run, but yeah, with the Nuggets, you know, I'm just kind of like, you know, just put them in the conference finals now. Now people in Minnesota will not like that. And I get it. I understand. Trust me. I've heard from enough of you going back to an article I wrote a few months ago. And some of these people are still like getting in my DMs about that specific article. I'm like, all right, relax. All I said from the start was that I don't see them making it to the conference finals.
Well,
and I still don't see them making it to the conference finals.
I don't know. You're not wrong about that, but I don't know, man. If Anthony Edwards keeps doing what he's doing, and he can kind of just loses his mind a couple times, they could give Denver a 7-game series. Like,
I don't. I'm not buying it, Sean. They could.
They could push them to seven.
A lot of things could happen. I will say this right now: they will not beat Denver in a 7-game series.
Well, I won't beat them. I wouldn't say they'll beat Denver, but I could see going to seven because this is all Anthony Edwards keeps doing what he's doing. And it should be harder against better competition to do what he's doing. But, man, that guy, he's making the right plays. Like, that's the thing that stands out to me. He's not only like scoring, but he's also making the right plays
yeah.
In these games. And it's just Phoenix Phoenix has to kind of throw junk at them because they don't have the pieces to play you kind of straight up or, you know, kind of honest. And so yeah. I have an issue with I have an issue with with Phoenix trying to play defense. They can't do it.
I mean, the way they're put together, I don't think anyone expected them to be great defensively. I mean, you gotta, especially in the playoffs, you gotta be decent, you know, and get stops when you really need them. That's what the NBA is now. You're never gonna really shut teams down because of, you know, the era we live in. You gotta be able to get stops when it really matters. But the Suns, they haven't really been able to do that all season, to really just get stops when they need to get them. You know, they're all about scoring. Like that's how this, when you build a team like this with guys that can, you know, easily average 30 a game, all of them, if they wanted to, you're really just saying, all right, we're just going to try to outscore people. And, you know, that was good enough to get them to sixth seed and a bad matchup because they can't match up front because of the size against and talent against the Timberwolves. Mm-hmm. That's what that got them.
Yeah, they can't do it, and the Suns, they can't. They don't have even the pieces to even try and play good defense. So yeah. that's why Edwards is just kind of picking them apart and kind of he won't be able to do that in games next round. But yeah, it'll be tough.
Yeah, it'll be a lot tougher. I mean, I think, you know, I'm not saying Denver would sweep Minnesota in the second round. I don't think that's even on the table, but, you know, five or six game series, I can see Denver doing that to them. I really could. I could see a 5 or 6 game series. Not saying it can't go 7, but I just don't see Minnesota winning that series. But I want to jump up to the Clippers and Mavericks. So we've talked about this for a long time. The Clippers are hard to trust. This is a team that just, you know, was it 5 years now that they've been together? As far as PG and Kawhi, I think it's been 5 years.
Yeah, close to it, yeah.
Yeah, I think this is the fifth year. It was 2019 that they went there. So, yeah, mm-hmm. 5 years. And, you know, they got to one conference finals, but because Kawhi got hurt, he wasn't healthy, they lost to the Suns in six games a few years back. But outside of that run, they haven't really been close. They haven't, you know, second round a couple times, you know, first round. I think they got knocked out, you know, in the first round as well. But I just wonder, like, how much longer can they go along like this as far as the Clippers are concerned? Now, I understand they're opening a new, do they open the new stadium next year? 2014?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
So you still want to have Kawhi and PG there, you know, to sell some tickets. I get that. Totally understand. But this series here, and it, you know, it just seems like every time I see them against the Mavericks, it doesn't matter if it's regular season or postseason. Like, Luka is just going off on them. He's just going off. And then, you know, you surround him with, you know, the supporting cast that he has now. Who's going to win this series, Sean? I mean, it's 1-1 right now. Clippers are obviously have the home court here, but do you see the Mavericks winning this series? That's kind of what I'm feeling, man. Like, it's so hard for me to trust the Clippers now, man. It just really, I want to trust them, but it's just hard.
Yeah, with this, before the series started, I kind of wanted to zag back to the Clippers because it felt like everybody was on the Mavs.
Yeah.
Because we all know not to trust the Clippers, and I wanted to. They won the game one, and Harden, you know, played well, and they didn't have Kawhi. And then Kawhi comes back and he, like, you know, scores 17 or whatever it is, and
he hobbled
through.
They
lose, and it's just I don't trust this. I don't trust this Clippers franchise whatsoever. I think you wrote that. I think I wrote that. I think. Yeah. You know, most people have written about them since
Plenty of times.
Since they didn't even make it like to play the Lakers that first year in the bubble, we were like, yep. Oh, you guys talk yep. all this shit, all this stuff, yep. and you didn't even make it to play Lakers. So
yeah, and then they made excuses. Oh, we didn't want to be there. Well, nobody
yeah.
else either.
Yeah, whatever. Like they, you guys have never wanted to be there. The Clippers. I don't know. With Kawhi, this to me is kind of where former franchise players go to die.
The Clippers?
Yeah.
I mean,
Harden, like he's like, oh, I'm going to go to the Clippers and we're going to Westbrook. Oh, I'm going to go to the Clippers. And we're going to PG Leonard. Like, oh, we're going to change the culture. No, you're not. No, this is the Clippers.
Exactly.
Your fans don't really show up. Your owner, just talks a lot and wants to just spend all this money, but
he wants to buy a championship. Basically.
You need like this team needs to be exercised. like it just is one of those things where it kind of reminds me of, I don't think you're a big Premier League guy, but like, it was always Manchester United used to be like the Lakers more or less, and Man yeah. City was the other team
yeah.
or the Mets. So it's a more of a Yankees Mets type thing.
Yeah,
and now like Man City, like they finally got it on around. They spent so much money to do it right, and Man U is falling off.
Huh.
But like you just can't come. You just can't do that in the NBA. You can't like no amount of money is going to buy you a championship.
It's hard. It's hard. And so, it's not baseball. It's not baseball.
And you're not going to flip the Lakers, like the LA against the Lakers. So it's just a matter of like, kind of what are you doing and what are you trying to do? And I don't know. I guess the long-winded answer of saying no, I think that the Mavs are going to take it because the Clippers are cursed or incompetent or both or just the Clippers. There's no other franchise. When you think of LA Clippers, I don't even think like – I just think of – either losing or, unreached potential.
Yeah, yeah. Or, unreasonable expectations at times. With this team, at least, as far as under the PG Kawhi era. Because, those first couple years, people were talking about NBA finals and they should do this and do that. And I bought in for a little bit, but after a while, I'm just like, you know what? They've continued to show me that they just can't do it. They can't. Well,
I think if you have an injury history, the last franchise I'm going to go to is the Clippers. Just seems like just bad juju. Like Blake Griffin, his career was shortened by injuries, and I just like anything that the Clippers touch seems to wither and die. So.
Speaking of the injury aspect, how much longer do you think we're going to see Kawhi Leonard in the NBA? Because I think he's done soon. I think he could call it quits after next season, possibly. I know he just signed an extension not that long ago, but that never stopped anybody from leaving.
I think we'll see him as long as that extension is running. I think the extension was pretty ridiculous. So I think we'll stay around to the end of that. Whether he's on the Clippers or gets bought out, it remains to be seen. But he's not going anywhere. That Kawhi is a very shrewd individual, and so he's going to get his money. and he'll be fine. But he'll never get the Clippers a title. That's never going to happen.
Well, I think that window honestly is closed for them.
This was the last year.
Honestly, I think even before this, I think it was close. I do. I think maybe last year might have been. I thought last year might have been the last shot, but I think that window was closed. I just don't see it happening. I mean, once you start going to bringing in, past their prime Westbrook and James Harden at the same time. You've effectively jumped the shark, in my opinion, and it's just over. Like, it's time to wrap it up. It's over. Now, they're going to keep going because, again, like we mentioned, they got a new stadium, a new arena opening down there. I think they're going to be in Inglewood, if I remember correctly. So you know, they got to get people in there to watch games. And, you know, you at least got to have PG and the thought of Kawhi being out there. Well, and I say the thought because, you know, he ain't always out there.
Yeah. Yeah. I just think it's funny. I mean, as I said earlier, like the Clippers were a franchise player. It's also like they're the zombie Thunder. Paul George, Westbrook, and Harden, all members
of
Thunder, all now, like, you know, they didn't all play on the Thunder at the same time. You know, PG and Westbrook did, and Westbrook and Harden, but like, they're just, it's just comical to see to see what this team is. It kind of reminds me of that early 2000s Blazers team, the Jail Blazers, where they had a bunch of cast offs, C. Smith, Deadlift Shrimp, you know, Sean Kemp. And like they were a good team, and they could make a run, but they also had like Rasheed Wallace, who was an up and coming, and like if this Clippers team had SGA still, then it's a different conversation.
Completely. But you know, but they didn't know what he was going to become. What I mean, so
well, but and also since it's the Clippers, of course he goes on to become, you know, a borderline MVP player, definitely an MVP candidate, and
caliber, yeah, definitely.
Lighting up, you know, the playoffs so far and can't be stopped. So
yeah.
this is how it always should have played out for the Clippers, and this is how, you know, it'll continue into the future. So rough. I don't mean to be mean to Clippers fans, but sorry.
Yeah, it's no disrespect meant to any Clippers fans, but I mean, even Clippers fans know. It's like, I mean, Kawhi can't stay on the court. I mean, you just really never know from day to day. Even in the playoffs, you don't know if he's going to play. You don't. You have no idea. And then, you know, Paul George has times when he's hurt and he's not going to miss games. So, and then you don't know what you're going to get from Harden from game to game in the playoffs, or really in general at this point. Like, you just don't know. And then you got Westbrook. Like, this team is so unpredictable. In their, you know, I'd say in their production. Now, you know, at the beginning, you know, back in December, late November, early December, you know, when Harden first kind of came around, remember, they went on a nice little streak there, nice little run, because they started the season off real slow. And, you know, everybody was talking about, oh, yeah, the Clippers this, Clippers that. And I'm looking, I'm like, you know what's going to happen. You know what's going to happen with this team. We've seen it 4 years before this. We know what's going to happen. I don't care what they're doing in December and January. I don't care. What are they going to do in March, April, May? By May, they'll probably be done. Let's just be honest. Well, this series will probably linger a little bit. So, you know, by early May, they'll probably be done. Because I see this series probably going 7. Whoever wins, I see this series probably going 7 with the Clippers and Mavs.
I feel like this series is going 7 for sure. Yeah, and we know how it's going to look, and you know, would say the Clippers' best draft pick in the history of the organization is maybe Blake Griffin, but the second is definitely SGA, and so like okay, yeah, this is how this works.
That's a good. I'm trying to think. Like, is Blake Griffin their best draft pick ever?
I think so. Number one overall pick.
I mean, just based on his career. I'm not based on where he's picked. Like, just their most productive?
Well, yeah, when I think of like talent, he obviously had talent to go number one overall. He did go number one overall. He was multiple time All Star. I think he even made, you know, an All NBA team.
I think he made a couple. Yeah, I think he made a couple. Yeah.
He's probably like the de facto best Clippers pick, but I think there's no argument that the second best is SGA. I mean, I guess we'd have to go way back, but you know, I don't know if some of those old Clippers are even in the conversation. I mean, I don't know. I'd have to look at it, but I think as far as contemporary, the modern era, those are definitely the two best picks.
I mean, so old, like, you know, going back a ways, the only two that pop to mind for me are Elton Brand, for like the Clippers drafted him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Danny Manning. So I mean, other than that, I'm trying to think of like drafted by the Clippers. Like, I can't really think of any like anybody else that was drafted by them and went on to just, you know. And I would say, yeah, probably Blake Griffin right now, but you know, if SGA wins an MVP in the next year or two, then it's going to be him. Because he's up. Yeah, I mean, he's yeah. finished top three right now.
Honestly, yeah, we'll see. But I think, you know,
or top three or four, whatever.
We're talking about a guy who projects to have a longevity and
yeah,
you know, it's probably a little healthier than Blake Griffin thus far, or just kind of healthy position and body type. SGA could go down as like the best Clipper ever drafted, and he'll probably do most of it in OKC. So,
yeah, he could. He could. Speaking of SGA, he is a finalist for the 23-24 MVP, Kia MVP award. Let me get that right. So you got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Luka Doncic, and Nikola Jokic. Don, who you got? Who you got winning this one?
Oh, Jokic.
Jokic, yeah, you think it's pretty much foregone? Like, it's Jokic?
I mean, if it's not him, then...
It's Luka.
No, if it's not him, then...
You don't think?
Then,
really?
Then the voters need to have their heads examined, because it's Doncic. I'm not Doncic. It's Joker. It's Joker. And it's yeah. Joker again. I mean, no one in the league is as good as him. No other team, dramatically better record than them. I mean, I know that OKC got the one seed, but it was by, what, a game or two? And another team that like had the better record was Boston, and that was more of a team, you know, a good team more so than one guy really leading the way. So it's Denver, not Denver, but it's Jokic, and
yeah.
It is until somebody, you know, kind of unseats him more or less, or he has an injury-plagued season. But
yeah,
so the guy's ridiculous, and he's doing it again. I mean, 27-20-10. The other night, so I don't. Okay.
Yeah, he and again, it just goes back to the Nuggets being so well rounded, but it all starts with him. It all starts with Jokic, the Joker. Yeah, I think you're right, and I think it's gonna go Joker, Luka, and then Shai's probably gonna finish third in voting, in my opinion.
Yeah, a version of those three. But this year, if either one of those. Like SGA or Doncic kind of were able to steal it, that we look back on it immediately as like a Malone winning over Jordan type thing, or it's the writers and the voters kind of got sick of the one guy winning and talked themselves into another guy just having, you know, kind of a out of body year. So, I do think Doncic could get there eventually. But he'd have to be like, say that if the Mavs won 60 games this year, then he would win the MVP.
Yeah, I mean, even if they just would have, finished one, now been able to win enough games to finish one instead of five, I think he might not even if they won 60 games, they could maybe it was 58, whatever. I think he would stand a much better chance. But I think, like you said, it's pretty much going to be Jokic. That's going to be number three for him. You know, three in the last what 4 years now that he will have won if he wins it. So yeah, but I think those three are the guys there now coming into the season. I thought Jason Tatum would step up and do it, but obviously, yeah, that didn't happen. He had a good season. I'm not saying he didn't have a good season, but MVP not as much. What about Defensive Player of the Year? So we got Bam Adebayo, Rudy Gobert, and the rookie sensation, Victor Wembanyama. Who you got?
Defensive Player of the Year. I mean, Rudy was on the best, had the best team defense.
Yeah.
Victor is like the most individually like kind of destructive guy on that list. And then Bam, I disdain the Heat, but I also, Bam is like one of those guys where it's just like, okay. I mean, at one point we should just give him one. Like, it doesn't matter if he's like margin, like way better than Gobert or Wembanyama, but at some point we got to give him some kind of love for that.
Yeah.
The Heat need to like win more than, 40, 45 games or what it is for me to like, for him to deserve that. But, I think it'll be Gobert because Minnesota's defense this year has been really good.
But see, I feel like the amount of games your team wins matters less for other awards outside of the MVP. Because with MVP, we always kind of look at, okay, well, where did their team finish? But I feel like it's not as important with other awards like this one. Just my opinion. I don't feel like that's as important, especially when, you know, you look at Wembanyama and how dominant he's been defensively. I mean, look how far ahead he's been in block shots and even steals to an extent. I mean, or where he's finished in steals. I think that matters, just the individual player for that. You know what I mean? For that. I think that matters a lot more than, or I guess the stats, than, you know, with the MVP. Yeah, it's individual, but it also, you know, where did you take your team? Because the MVP is more about offense. Let's be honest. The MVP is more about what you did, were able to do. Yeah, all around, but more so offensively, and how you led your team offensively and how many wins you led your team to as an offense, you know, being dominant offensively. Because, you know, Jokic is not known as a defensive anything. So I think the wins matters more for MVP, really more so than any of the other awards, in my opinion.
Sure. I would agree. But I don't know, as far as defense goes, I still feel like your defense can't be absolute garbage. And for most part this year, the Spurs were not very good.
Well, the Spurs are just trash right now. I get it.
Yeah.
I also think that kind of kind of factors in too.
Wembanyama seems like he's a guy who could average five blocks a year if he wanted to 1 year. And so, but I don't know. It also feels like I could see Wemby stealing it because people love him, and his late season charge was insane. And he also gets these blocks, and it's not to the detriment of the defense. Like, you kind of remember Hassan Whiteside, he'd get three blocks a game, but he'd also, you know, he'd do it by leaving his man.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of freeloading the freelancers, and then people getting behind him. And he's doing more harm than good, you know, hunting for blocks as opposed to keeping position. Wemby doesn't do that. Wemby is in the right position and doing things. It's just the Spurs are bad. I don't know. As far as defensive player of the year goes, honestly, these kind of things don't really. I'm not going to lose sleep over if it's Rudy Gobert or Victor Wembanyama. So either one of them, I guess.
Yeah. If I got a pick, I'm going to go with Victor, because I also think that I feel like, with voters too, sometimes storylines play into these things when they shouldn't, because, you know, I think he'd be the first rookie to win defensive MVP, defensive player of the year, along with winning. He's going to win rookie of the year. Like, that's not even a, you know what I mean? Like, if it wasn't for him, it'd probably be Chet, right? Chet Holmgren, rookie of the year. If not for,
it would be Chet.
Cause he was out all last year. So
Chet, but it's definitely,
it's definitely Wemby. So
yeah.
I think those, you know, that storyline is going to play into this, just in my opinion. Now, I could be wrong. If not him, then yeah, Rudy's going to win. I think this will be number four for Rudy if he wins it. I think he has three already. So yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. You talk about one of those things. If there is an award that Rudy Gobert can win four times, then how valuable is the award really?
Oh, man. I was just going to the disrespect that he gets, and you just beat me to it.
I don't know. It's one of the things where it's like, man, like he also taunts people and is just kind of a clown. So you wonder why you feel disrespect you. You kind of bring it on yourself. So yeah, okay.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, why do you think he? Because I mean, I really think he is probably the most disrespected NBA player. I'm talking about by other players, not by the media or by fans, by other players. I mean, am I wrong in that? It feels like he's the most frequently disrespected publicly. Like, players don't really care for Rudy Gobert for whatever reason. I ain't just talking about Draymond. Draymond took it too far, but just in general, somebody's always got something to say about him.
I don't know. He comes off as kind of a heel too. It seems like he kind of enjoys that. He's from France, so he's always you know, played against Team USA in the Olympics and the Worlds, and he's just kind of annoying. And the fact that he can get played off the court is always fun. And the fact that he's kind of the face of of what the Warriors can do to you if you try and play a traditional big. And so, like, those kinds of things, it's just, like, he is the face of so many things that people love to hate. And so it's, like, this is just kind of – this is just his life. And he also leans into it, too. Let's not get that mistaken. He definitely leans into it.
He's the face of everything people love to hate.
France, traditional big men who can't score outside of 15 feet. Exactly. As I said, if there's an award that Rudy Gobert can win four times, then people will actually start disrespecting that award. So,
some NBA voters don't give the award to Rudy Gobert, because according to my man Sean here, people are just going to forget about the award and say, you know what, if Rudy won it four times, there's no reason there's no reason to even give this award out anymore if he can win it four times.
Exactly.
Oh, my God. All right. So a couple more here. Most improved player, Tyrese Maxey, already won that. You good with that one? Sengun out of Houston, and then Kobe White in Chicago, they were also finalists. But I would say, yeah, Tyrese Maxey over them, yeah. Even though they both had really good seasons, I say, yeah, Tyrese Maxey deserved that award over them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't really know how this award works sometimes, because it feels like sometimes it's like, is it like, are you most improved, or is it because you had more opportunity this year? Maxey had more opportunity. And then, like, obviously Kobe White had opportunity this year that he didn't have previously. But Kobe White was, like, we didn't see this coming with him, since he's been kind of in, just floating out there in Chicago. But no, I think Maxey is
everybody's floating out here in Chicago.
I think Maxey, I want him to get the shine and the recognition that he deserves. Whether it's this award or whatever else, because what he's done in Embiid's absence, I know they didn't do that well, but like the growth he's made, and man, if they didn't blow that game on Monday night, we're talking just loads of praise on Maxey, because he had big shots, he made big plays. And he's the running mate to Embiid that we've all kind of always wanted. We wanted a perimeter guy who could score, make paint, make plays on offense and defense, gritty, played hard, kind of embodied that Philly attitude. And Maxey definitely embodies that Philly attitude more so than even Embiid, in my opinion. So Maxey, let's give him all the love that he can get, because he deserves it.
Yeah. There you go. And then sixth man of the year, Naz Reid wins it. Bobby Portis Jr. and Malik Monk were in there, and I'm seeing some posts online that Malik Monk got snubbed for the award. But who did you see win? Like, you good with Naz Reid winning it? I mean, I know it's six man, so it's kind of whatever. But you cool with Naz Reid winning it? I mean, he had a
single season. Well, if we want to give Minnesota deserves like some kind of accolades because they've had a good season, so let's give the defense player of the year to Wemby, and then we'll give then Naz Reid already got the other one, so yeah, we're kind of covering all our bases here, because I don't think Minnesota should have two individual awards. But also, it's also like Malik Monk, like, man, if you're getting upset that you got snubbed for a sixth man, I don't know, man. Maybe be more upset that you got snubbed for a non-starter spot. So maybe set your goals on being a star next, and then maybe the sixth man will come. I don't know. It's sixth man of the year. I enjoy him, so good for him.
I don't necessarily think, though, especially nowadays, I don't think necessarily not being a starter is a bad thing. You know what I mean? I think, because everybody's not going to be the star, so everybody got to play a role. You know what I mean? Like, some guys are better suited to come off the bench as a sixth man. They just are. Some guys are better suited for that. Now, I know for some, like, at the end of Carmelo's career, where he was bouncing around and he didn't want to come off the bench, But he came from that era like us of the 90s where, you know, starting meant a little more back then. I don't think it means the same thing as it did. Not to everybody. To some people, obviously. I just don't think it's as important to some because some guys start the game, but they don't finish it. I think that's more important. Like, if you're one of those guys down the stretch on your team, whether you start or you come off the bench, you may still play 28 to 30 minutes a game. If you're in there in clutch moments, I think that means you have the trust of your team and more importantly, of your coach as well and of the coaching staff to be able to finish games, even though you're not a starter. So I don't necessarily think, you know, starting versus coming off the bench, especially if you're the sixth man, it's almost like a de facto starter to me anyway. You know what I mean? Because when someone from the starting lineup goes down, you're probably going to be starting anyway.
Yeah, I guess when you put it like that, I mean, when I think
this is how I've looked at it like that for quite a while now.
For sure. I guess when I think of a guy who kind of embodies the six man role and embraces it, a guy to me this season, and we kind of have really thrown all kinds of shade at the Clippers. Russell Westbrook is a guy this season played 68 games. You know, if he doesn't, maybe doesn't hurt. I think he broke a bone in his hand or something. Like broke his hand, maybe.
Yeah, he did.
Maybe if he doesn't miss time. Even though he's still qualified because 65 games is the qualifier. He was allowed just like 11-5-4 this season or something like that. But like he embraced the sixth man role.
And but it's took right time though.
And
he didn't want to embrace it in L.A.
Lakers. No, he didn't. But the fact that he made that conscious decision, like, I am not a starter. They're telling me I'm a starter. If I want to play and contribute to winning basketball, this is what I have to do. And that's what he's done. And so if I think of a guy who kind of embodies what a six man is or what it means to be six man, like, we can give it to Westbrook this year because that was something that I didn't think he would ever be capable of doing, kind of like Melo or an Allen Iverson who would rather retire than ride the bench. So shout out to Westbrook as well because he played six man the role like you described beautifully this season.
Okay, a little Westbrook love there. I'm not mad at that. All right, and this last one we'll go over here real quick. NBA Clutch Player of the Year. So we got Steph Curry, DeMar DeRozan, and SGA, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Those are the finalists for the award. I think I know where you're going with this, but go ahead.
This is the first year of this award.
I think they had correctly. Last year, right? Or maybe
no, this I think is just the first season of okay. it. Yeah, because whatever. I would go with I don't know. This seems also almost kind of a lifetime achievement award. DeRozan or was that the first one? Curry.
Yeah,
Curry or DeRozan? I guess DeRozan.
It ain't gonna be DeRozan. If it's not SGA, it's gonna be Steph Curry. And like you mentioned, it could be more of like a career achievement award in a way. But if we're just basing it off the season, I think I would go SGA. I love Steph Curry, but I would go SGA.
Yeah, I mean, the reason why I kind of think of DeRozan is just that Chicago was in close games all season long, and they won enough to make the play-in. That doesn't really matter to anybody, but I don't know. DeRozan also, like, he's kind of guy, he's too good for this kind of role I was talking about for the Celtics, you know, kind of the Wiggins role where it's just like he gets hot and whatever. But if for whatever reason he's available and the Celtics need a random piece or somebody to get them through these crunch time woes, like, give me DeRozan immediately because that guy gets – and he takes like kind of a few bad shots. He makes great decisions. And when he's taking those bad shots, his footwork is so good that it's like, okay, that's fine. So, give me DeRozan, a little Chicago bias.
Hey, nothing wrong with that. I kind of feel like this may be the consolation for SGA because his team, you know, he's going to finish third, in my opinion, in MVP. Although his team, you know, they finished first in the conference, you know, better than both of the other two guys that are, you know, in the running for MVP in Nikola Jokic and Luka Doncic. So I kind of think this will be the consolation with SGA winning it. And if not him, I think it's guaranteed to be Steph Curry. Because like you said, kind of a almost a career achievement because Steph has been so clutch, you know, for much of his career, you know. Yeah, he's had times when he wasn't clutch in the playoffs. I get it, but he's had other times when he was very clutch in playoffs, regular season, championship, whatever it is. So I think this could be kind of, since it's the first one, I think it could be kind of viewed as that being, you know, we're going to give it to Steph as, you know, this is, you know, our appreciation for what you've done throughout your career, even though it's for this year. But, you know, we get that sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even, is this like, I guess this is a voter rule, like the voters, not a voter award that voters
vote. I'm guessing they vote on, I'm guessing they have to vote on all of these. I mean,
yeah, but I feel like this is kind of the thing where it would be like, okay, let's just have the NBA hand out, pick who they want this award to go to, because this is like NBA, the NBA made this award for publicity. And so let's just give it to the guy who, you know, whose name is the flashiest. So Curry is fine. But yeah, I just think this award is kind of superfluous. It doesn't really mean much to anybody or anything at this point. I mean, maybe in the future seasons it will, because somebody like, I don't know, whoever else will go off in these situations. But clutch moments, I don't know, man. This is just an Adam Silver feel-good award to
probably
to give to Steph Curry. And if this is what they wanted, they shouldn't even like let the voters decide on this. Like NBA,
just give it out.
Like, you know, like how they do kind of do Man of the Year award or whatever. This kind of award should be in that category where it's like, don't let, like the voters are just going to mock you on podcasts like this when you only have them talk about this award. Just give it out yourself. We'll all kind of stand and clap. And, you know, you can have a ceremony or whatever, and then it's fine.
Okay. I mean, yeah, you know, that would probably be good. And maybe secretly behind the scenes, that's what they're going to do anyway. Who knows? But, and then, sorry, there is one more coach of the year. I'm still having a hard time pronouncing the Thunder's coach's last name. I'm going to call him Mark D. Diagnals. How do you say it? I still have a hard time with that one, but he's a finalist. Chris Finch and then Jamal Mosley from the Magic, and like I said, Chris Finch from the Timberwolves. Well, I don't know if you remember this, but I think it was last year. DJ, when we were still, you know, doing the Deadspin thing, he picked Chris Finch to win Coach of the Year last year. Seems he might have been a year too early there.
I think it'll be Diagonal.
Think so? Number one seed?
Yeah, number one seed. Youngest team to ever earn a number one seed. And they just, I mean, they play well together. And they play good defense. And, and they're so young. So, yeah, give it to him. Chris Finch, I mean, they fell to three.
Yeah.
I don't know. Minnesota, how many – regular season awards do they need? Like, I don't think they need a third. So give the OKC, you give the Thunder. SGA, if he doesn't get the most clutch award, he'll still have a first team NBA under his belt. And so
definitely,
yeah, that's also a help consolation prize.
So Sean is not a fan of Minnesota potentially winning three awards.
No, I don't think that's not really representative. Is that representative of the season we saw? I don't know. I don't think so.
I don't think anything is representative anymore of what we've seen a lot of times. Some of these times, I don't know. They just throw stuff out, you know.
Yeah, we can close here because we can go long. But Clippers, Mavericks, both those teams average like 116 and 117 per night in the regular season. I think right now they're like right around 100, if not below. So nothing is representative of the regular season anymore in the postseason.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll close out on that. Sean, I appreciate you joining me again. As always, this was episode 134, the Courtside Crossover with Chris Partee. I'll check y'all out soon. Peace.